It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
KSL at Night was recorded and produced this afternoon. KSL at Night. Some of Utah's top political specialists join a roundtable on the day's biggest stories. KSL is at 102.7 FM and on every smart speaker when you say play KSL News Radio.
Welcome to KSL at Night, the newest show from KSL News Radio. We bring you the day's news with a refreshing take. Each night, you get different hosts. Tonight, I am your host, Taylor Morgan, along with my co-host tonight, Scott Howell.
Thank you, Taylor. It's great to be with you, buddy. I appreciate it.
So happy to have you here. We've been having a great time here in studio prepping for tonight's show. We have so many incredible guests lined up for the next 2 hours that drop whatever you're doing, buckle up, settle in. We have an incredible show for you tonight. We are going to start the show tonight with getting into the topic, Russia and Ukraine. It is the story. It is the key issue, and we're going to get into it. Scott, we have with us tonight an incredible guest for this first segment. And Scott, will you give us a little bit of background of what's happening? What are the latest developments that we're seeing in Ukraine?
You know, it's amazing, and it is so fluid. Every second, it seems like it's changing. But the first talks aimed at stopping the fighting between Ukraine and Russia ended Monday with no agreement except to keep talking. Well, in an increasingly isolated Moscow ran into unexpectedly fierce resistance on the ground and economic havoc at the home. So 5 days into this Russia invasion, the Kremlin again has raised the specter of nuclear war, which just blew my mind. But, you know, if you know Putin's personality.
Pun intended there,
yeah,
Scott.
Yeah, it was a pun intended. It was very good. But I think, you know, what a crazy war. Maybe someday there might be some film made about this, how the tanks are running out of gas on the roads and people are having to help them and things like that. But what a blessing and what a privilege we have to have Professor Guerrero.
Yeah. So right now we have with us calling in live from just outside of Jerusalem. Actually, it's 1 a.m. in Israel right now. So we're very, very grateful to have with us Professor Amos Giora, who is a professor of law at the University of Utah S.J. Quinney School of Law. Professor, thank you so much for joining us tonight. What can you tell us about what you're seeing happening right now in Ukraine?
Good morning, good evening, good wherever you are. I think your opening is correct. I think the situation is both so fluid that what you say here, it's 1:15 in the morning, what you say at 1:15 in the morning may not be necessarily corrected at 1:30 in the morning. But I do think if we're going to try to connect various dots, one, I think Putin were he honest, you'd have to say that he's very surprised by the intensity of the Ukrainian response. I mean, this is self-defense. The self-defense was drawn up, and the Ukrainians seem to have rallied around their, frankly, much maligned president, who's been a source of humor because he's a former stand-up guy. So first one, I think I would say a shout-out to the Ukrainians. I mean, they're fighting. They're really, really fighting. Two, I think Putin has been clearly surprised by the international reaction. It took a while for the West to understand that the Ukrainians were going to fight. I remind all of us, that a few weeks ago, the new German chancellor offered the Ukrainians 5,000 helmets, for which he was rightly mocked. That's correct. The last few days, the West, I think once they understood that the Ukrainians were really taking the fight to the Russians and defending their homeland, I think the West has rallied around the Ukraine. And I think the third thing that clearly is surprising Putin is the sheer number of demonstrations in the streets, particularly in St. Petersburg and in Moscow. We can only imagine the fate of the demonstrators. But the fact that those demonstrators are willing to take to the streets against this regime, I don't think he planned on A, B, or C. Where we go from here, who knows? It is interesting to note that even though the talks had started yesterday, I mean, today for you, yesterday for me, the sides seem to say that they're willing to continue the talking. Is it a facade? Is it for real? Too early to tell. But I think that Putin, much like his predecessors in 1979, when they went into Afghanistan, I hope will have misjudged.
Mm. This is so fascinating. Just today, at the conclusion of these talks, the head of the Russian delegation participating in those talks, Vladimir Medinsky, stated that, you know, the talks had lasted 5 hours and that they had, quote, found certain points on which common positions could be foreseen. And then as you mentioned, he stated that they would continue talks in the coming days. So is it realistic to think that these talks are anything more than superficial? Will these talks potentially actually lead to a resolution of this invasion?
It's very interesting. There's been a seemingly an approach by the Ukrainians, actually to the Israeli prime minister, to serve as I don't know if the word mediator is the right word, because don't forget that we here in Israel, we have a large Russian Jewish community comprised of Jews from the Ukraine and from Russia. There are, I believe, 8,000 Israelis in the Ukraine. I don't know how many Jews live in the Ukraine. And the role of requesting the Israelis to serve as a mediator tells me that the sides, to what extent, want to somehow resolve this. There's also talk about that Putin needs some kind of an elegant way to come down, you know, from the proverbial tree that he's climbed, maybe too high. The fact that you're right to point out the fact that the Russian negotiator, you know, I don't know if it was pre-staged, pre-planned, or he actually meant it, that they're willing to consider it, continue the conversations, may well mean that the Russians are looking for a way out. But I think for the three reasons that I've stated.
Professor, when you look at what's gone on today, what's the Ukraine really hoping comes from these meetings? What would be their ultimate goal? I mean, we know all that would be to be peace, but do you think that they're going to do a give and take on this, or what are your thoughts on that?
It's a hell of a question, because don't forget that the talks are going on while the Russian tanks are in Ukraine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a different way to conduct negotiations. I put in parentheses, I've spent 25 years my own life negotiating the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. So, you know, I have experience with these things. It's difficult to negotiate when the tanks are rumbling through. I think from the Ukrainian perspective, the win-win would be obviously the Russian tanks do a reverse and get out of Dodge. I think it's also important to complicate everything. From the Russian perspective, they have not invaded the Ukraine. They are seeking to free the Ukraine. Because remember that the Russians view the Ukraine as part of the broader Russia, or the former Soviet Union. There has to be some kind of a paradigm shift here. Putin is freeing Ukraine. I think that's going to make this difficult. That said, the closing of the blocking of the SWIFT accounts clearly is impacting the Russian economy. The ruble is taking a clear hit. The fact that Russian planes can't fly to Western Europe, and I also understand they can't come to America because Delta is cutting. Backing off from the co-chairing with him. It's going to make Putin be able to go only, you know, East, India, China, and even the Chinese seem to be very hesitant to offering him some kind of a lifeline. In some sense, he really may have misjudged this from the Ukrainian perspective. On the other hand, it's important to remember the Russian army is enormous, much larger than the Ukrainian army.
Professor, if I can ask you a very quick question. One of the things that we have seen that has been particularly troubling in Putin's rhetoric, and even unfortunately some of the rhetoric of politicians in the U.S., is claiming that Russia's invasion is justified based on anti-Semitic justifications.
Right.
What is your reaction to that very quickly?
I don't understand the argument. I don't also understand making this argument by this battle is de-Hitlerization or de-Nazization. I didn't understand that whatsoever. I don't understand the argument.
Well, that certainly was propaganda at its finest. I mean, really, talk about misinformation. It was just a leader in for them to all believe it. But the irony is we have a Jewish leader in Ukraine. I mean, this is just the irony of
absolutely.
Putin is just messing the whole thing. I think he's going to be very embarrassed.
Well, this is affecting real people, Scott. Oh, yeah. And Professor Guerra, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Yes.
In our next segment, we are actually going to speak directly with a Russian citizen who lives in Utah and a family member of theirs that is currently a refugee from Ukraine in Poland. We're going to talk directly to some folks on the ground that are being directly personally impacted by this ongoing situation in Ukraine. Stay with us. We'll get into that next.
Make sure you're still part of KSL's Unrivaled as the Utah Jazz head to the postseason. Scott Mitchell and Alex Carrier on between 3 and 7 on the app or KSL Sports.